You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Ian, look at this.
What, it's a police box. What on earth is he doing here? Well, these things are usually on the street. I feel it. Did you feel it?
Faint vibration.
It's alive.
Earth Station Who, a fun mashup celebrating nearly 50 years of Doctor Who universe. Hold tight. You never know where the TARDIS is going next.
Laugh hard.
Run fast. Be kind.
Doctor, I let you go.
Hey everyone, it's Mike, and you're here for another episode of the Earth Station Who podcast. That's right, folks, we are back again, and this time we are going into what they call sometimes the lost years of Doctor Who. Before, you know, Doctor Who came back in 2005, and after it was canceled way back in the 90s, it was just like people were craving for new Doctor Who. And thank goodness from the fine folks at BBC Interactive, they gave us Doctor Who, The Scream of the Shalka, and a story based off a story written by Paul Cornell. And it was basically for the 40th anniversary of Doctor Who back in 2003. So we actually almost got a ninth Doctor out of this one. And where it does it fit into canon? Does it not? We'll talk all about that this week. And we have a great crew to talk all about it. First, of course, the lovely and wonderful Mary Ogle.
Hi, everybody. It's great to be here.
Great to have you back on the show, Mary.
I'm really looking forward to talking about Scream of the Shalka.
Exactly. It's going to be an interesting one. What about you, Mikey? How welcome back to Earth Station Who?
Howdy. Always great to be back on this part of the station.
Well, we had to screw back in the blue light bulb. That's all we had to do. You know, we don't have a huge budget here on the network. Everybody knows that. We take it, you know, cut corners where we can. So when we're not up here, we just unscrew the blue light bulb. But then the other times it just goes, and, you know, and then I clear my throat and it's better. So it's cool.
And for all those people listening to this podcast on headphones, we do apologize for that.
Well, it's a... You know, it's not like I'm an old Jewish guy going, yet. You know, not yet.
And now we apologize for that, too.
Of course. We have so much to apologize for, but we're not going to even go there. And let us welcome back to the station. This is his first time actually on Earth Station Who, Alan J. Porter. Welcome, Alan.
Thank you. It's great to be back on the network and really delighted to be on this little Who corner or large Who corner or whatever it is, bigger on the inside, I guess. And really looking forward to talking about one of my all-time favorite Who stories.
Well, this is a good, you know, excuse. A lot of people, you know, might have not heard you on our other show. Do you want to introduce yourself to everybody and like who you are?
I'm Alan J. Porter. You can find me on the web at alanjporter.com or follow me on Twitter at Alan J. Porter. And I write stuff and make up stories. I write books about nonfiction stuff. I write written books about the Beatles, Bond, Batman, and a bunch of Star Trek. And got two books coming out this year, one about G.I. Joe and one about Battlestar Galactica, and I write comics, probably best known for writing the Cars comic book series for Boom for a few years. Currently doing a digital comic called Forgotten City, which you can get on Comixology, plug. And I also write high adventure fiction short stories with characters such as Sherlock Holmes and Alan Quatermain and other good fun stuff like that.
That is awesome, man. It's great to have you back on the network.
Thank you.
What is your history with Doctor Who?
I'm British. It's in my DNA.
Very true. Very true. Everyone
with it, but I'm giving my age away here because actually it wasn't around when I was born. So my first doctor was the first doctor. And I've been I've been told I've been watching the shows from the very beginning, but I will be honest, the first ones I could, first episode I can really remember clearly was The Web of Fear, the Patrick Troughton episode, and was pretty much hooked from that point onwards. But I have been told I did watch it from the very beginning. So
the Daleks scared you as a wee little lad, basically.
Yeah.
That is awesome. That is awesome. Well, we definitely want to hear from everybody at home. Please write us at eswpodcast@gmail.com. Definitely want to hear, you know, what your thoughts on the storyline was, or, you know, what other things you enjoyed during the Forgotten Years or the Lost Years. You know, Big Finish was becoming very popular at this time. And so there was a lot of Doctor Who, but just not on TV. So with that being said, you know, please definitely get in touch with us. This week, you know, there's not really any new Doctor Who news, but we have something even better than Doctor Who news. We have a Doctor Who Con coming up, and who better to talk all about Concaster Burris but Matthew himself. Hey, Matthew.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Good. So, Con K, it's 2 weeks away almost.
Yes, 2.5 weeks technically, but who's counting?
Who's counting? That's right, my friend. Who's counting? So tell us all about Con K.
Well, it is the North Alabama Doctor Who Convention. It'll be our 7th annual event. It will be June 9th and 10th at the Westin at Bridge Street in lovely Huntsville, Alabama. Our guests this year will include Mark Shepard, Canton Everett Delaware III, and Impossible Astronaut Day of the Moon, as well as his appearances as, well, Crawley and Supernatural, Badger and Firefly, The X-Files. Basically, if it's a geeky show, there's a good chance Mark Shepard has appeared in it sometime in the last 20 years. We also have Catherine Stewart, Paternoster Gang member Jenny Flint will be joining us as well. Kelly Yates, who of course has worked on the IDW and Titan Doctor Who comics, and Ellie Collins, who's a Huntsville native. She's a actress and writer who's appeared in shows including The Originals.
That's amazing. This is actually going to be the fourth time we've been coming to Con K.
Yes.
Wow. I can't believe it's been that long already. It's just amazing. And you guys put on a great show.
Well, thank you very much, Mike. We try.
So other than the big guests, what do you have going on over the weekend? Do you have panels there? Do you have Q&As? Does somebody coming out to Huntsville have to expect?
Well, we'll have the Q&As, obviously, with our guests. Both Mark Shepard and Cameron Stewart will be appearing on the main stage, and both Kelly and Ellie will be doing panels. I'll be doing the interviews on Saturday, being the convention's resident Doctor Who expert. But, of course, you guys will be doing the interviews on Sunday, so that's something for listeners to look forward to if they come to the con.
Oh, my gosh, that's right. We're going to actually be talking to people this year.
Oh, exciting, isn't it?
I'm actually nervous a little bit because I don't want Mark Shepard stealing my soul. That's all I have to say.
But we'll also have panels as well. We'll be covering not just Doctor Who topics, from looking forward to Jodie Whittaker's Doctor, the Big Finish audios that you mentioned earlier, which I'll be doing a panel on Saturday. We'll also be looking at things from The Prisoner, the great iconic Patrick McGoohan series from the 60s, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And of course, Supernatural, because how can we not with Mark Shepard being there?
He can answer all your Supernatural questions right there in front of you.
Yes.
That is awesome. So how can people find you guys?
You can find us on our website, concastarborus.com. You could probably just Google Alabama Doctor Who Convention. I think we are the first result that pops up. The problem with made up words, they can be difficult to spell. And not only, of course, our website, but also you can find our very active Facebook group, as well as our Twitter feed. And I believe we're on Instagram as well.
That is awesome, man. Yeah, you guys put on a fantastic show. And if you guys at home, anyone in Alabama, anyone in Tennessee, anyone in Georgia, South Carolina, Kentucky, even Missouri, you know, please, it's not that far of a drive. And it is really worth it. This show is one of my favorite Doctor Who cons of the year, and it's just a blast.
Indeed. I mean, we do our best to put on a good show, and it's very much a for the fans, by the fans style of convention. And while you talk about people coming from the Southeast, even getting into the Midwest, we've had people come all the way from New Hampshire, California. There's one of our people is coming all the way from Vancouver, British Columbia.
Wow. That's amazing. That's a lot of walking.
Well, you know, walk 500 miles and then walk 500 more.
Exactly. Just to be the man who can walk that. No, I'm not going to sing. Don't worry, folks. Do not worry. But that is awesome. And, you know, are tickets still available, or do you guys have tickets at the door?
Yes, tickets are still available at our website under the registration tab. They'll be available through, I believe, for about another week and a half or so from when we're recording. So that'll be next Friday, the
2nd.
First, I believe. Second, yes. Thank you. And tickets will be available at the door as well. So if for whatever reason you don't pre-reg, you still have the opportunity to get in when you get to the con.
That is awesome. And, you know, Huntsville is a great town. There's plenty to do. And if you're into rocket ships and spaceships and stuff, not just Doctor Who stuff, NASA is right around the corner from your location.
Indeed, the U.S. Space and Rocket Center, the only place in the world you can see not one but two Saturn V rockets from the Apollo program. So science fiction and science fact all in one package.
It is amazing. And the space shuttle, everything. It's just, it is great. If you, you know, plan on spending, you know, an extra day, because that alone is worth spending a day to do.
It is. It is very much. If you're into space stuff at all, the Space and Rocket Center is a wonderful place to visit.
That is awesome. One more time, Matthew, how can people find you guys?
You can find us at our website, conkastaburus.com. That's conkastaburous.com. And you can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Fantastic. Looking forward to seeing you very, very soon, my friend.
And looking forward to seeing you as well.
Awesome. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment with the Scream of the Shalka.
What is the Geekly Oddcast? It's a panel show of television.
I mean, seriously, where else was I supposed to go and watch Gomez Adams ride a rocket ship on a railroad track?
Gaming.
And the dice say 17.
Oh my god, 17 is Mystic Quest. And whatever comes to mind.
Why does Zod need a starship?
Alternating Thursdays on The Geekly Oddcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. We're here to talk all about The Scream of the Shalka, which was put out in 6 weekly parts from the 13th of November to the 18th of December in 2003 to celebrate the 40th anniversary of Doctor Who. It was interesting because this is my first time seeing it. I hadn't partaken before in this. So, Alan, thank you so much for, you know, recommending this one.
Well, you done everything else that I had on my list, so.
Touche, my friend, touche. So,
but this is one of my favorites anyway, so.
So this was interesting because it had Richard E. Grant as the Ninth Doctor, technically. And I'm using air quotes when they say Ninth Doctor. Because this is his only appearance.
Actually, no. Well, his only voiced appearance. The character also has an appearance in a short story, but.
That's true. That is very, very true. So, but yeah, on screen, basically.
On screen, yeah.
And so it's interesting, and I'm going to be the first one to say this. I liked him as the Doctor once he started getting into the role. For the first episode or so, I was a little put off by his character a little bit. He was very not grumpy, but, you know, he just didn't want to be helping anybody. He just wanted to get to the TARDIS and leave.
Yeah, he's a very much a grumpy Doctor.
Yes.
He is for the beginning. Yeah.
He kind of gives off almost a Colin Baker vibe in the beginning, but he mellows out as you go along.
Oh, very much so, especially when you kind of meet the companion, and you had Sophie, and it was interesting though, because it was also, I'm not trying to put it this way, but it was the doctor's first companion of color on Doctor Who.
Yes, so that's very true.
So it was groundbreaking in that way alone. So it was pretty cool. So, Alan, what drew you to the story back when it came out?
What drew to me when it came out was the fact it was the only new Who. I mean, as you said earlier, it was the 40th anniversary. There was no sign that Doctor Who would ever come back. There was all we had was the novel, not all, but they were good. The novels and the Big Finish stuff, very much into Big Finish at that point. And the 40th anniversary was coming up. And the story goes that various folks at BBC Interactive realised the 40th anniversary was coming up and that the BBC was intending to do absolutely nothing about it. And managed to get permission to not only do a Doctor Who story, but do a Doctor Who story with a brand new Doctor, because nobody thought it was ever going to come back and it didn't really matter. So the original plan was, as I understand it, the original plan was to actually do 12 episodes in total with this Doctor, and it would be three separate four-part stories. But as they were going through the process, it was announced that Doctor Who was coming back and as a live-action show. And they got basically told to stop what they were doing. Budget was cut, so it went from being 12 episodes to 6, and they expanded the story from a 4-episode story into a 6-episode story. So instead of getting 3 stories, we got 1 story.
Yeah, but this actually suffered a little bit, I felt, of what we used to call, with the old series, the extra padding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does have the padded episodes, where basically nothing happens other than somebody moves from point A to point B, but it doesn't really progress the plot much.
Exactly.
But for me, the big attraction of this story is just the possibilities. There's so many things hinted at here in Paul Cornell's script. The backstory to this Doctor, there's a whole thing about what happened to his previous companion, which was obviously traumatic. We have the android Master flying around with the Doctor in the TARDIS. How did that happen? How did that relationship build? The Doctor talking to presumably the Time Lords, whoever it is who's sending him around. And as you said, very clearly at the beginning, he doesn't want to get involved and then just becomes sort of mellows. I think it was on one of the DVD specials, documentaries with Paul Cornell. He talks about how actually Richard E. Grant sort of got into the part as they were playing it and started to improvise and really bring his own character into it. So by the sort of 3rd through 6th episode, you really see him get into the part while he's a little stilted in the first two. So, which I think just reflected what you said earlier. But for me, I think this is one of the great what ifs of Doctor Who. What if they'd have carried on with this way, or what if they'd actually transferred it over to the team, this team over to TV live action with Richard E. Grant as the Doctor and had him carry on as the official 9th Doctor. Because I always thought he would have made a great Doctor even before this. He was always sort of one of the ones that was in my mind whenever we started to talk about who's going to be the next actor in the role. I think he would have been great at it. And so for me, the attraction of this episode really is just, it's got a lot of unanswered questions. I like the concepts of the Shulker, and the fact that they could do a type of monster with animation that you couldn't have done on TV at the time. You couldn't really do a horde of worms with it being guys in rubber suits. So, the fact they used the idea of animation and the concepts and the flexibility it gave them to do something a little different. So it's got a whole lot of parts to it. So that just make it an intriguing episode for me.
Well, what about you, Mike and Mary? Was this your first time seeing it, or did you have experience with this one?
I've watched it before, but it was a while ago, so I didn't really remember much of it. But I do remember that I find it kind of frustrating because, actually for the same reasons Alan was talking about, because it seems like It does. I'm not sure it really holds together on its own for me, but I can see where it could have gone to some really interesting places if they'd had more time, if they'd been able to develop that character more. Because certainly Paul Cornell has planted a lot of very interesting seeds in his story, especially about the Doctor's tragic backstory, which would have been interesting to hear about. And I think Richard Grant, I heard RTD did not like Richard Grant at all. And I don't agree with that. I mean, I do think that it did take him a while to get into the character, but once he did, he was the Doctor, as far as I was concerned.
Yeah,
that character definitely came across as the Doctor to me.
Yeah, I saw something, I think, online somewhere that Russell T. Davis felt that Richard Grant was wooden and phoned it in. I think he probably only watched his first two episodes because that's not the case later on.
No, I agree with that. I think as the story got further along, he did get more into the character. But it was interesting because I've been listening to a lot of Big Finish audios lately, especially the Eighth Doctor. And it was interesting because Richard E. Grant sounds very similar to Paul McGann. And there were times when I was watching this and I thought I was hearing McGann more than Richard E. Grant.
Yeah, my sister said the same thing because she didn't realize it was Richard E. Grant. So the first thing she said was, is that Paul McGann? Like, no, but you're right. It does sound quite a bit like him, which in a way kind of throws you out of the story in the beginning because he looks so different.
This is the third time I've seen this. I don't think I saw it like right away in 2005, but I did see it like shortly thereafter. I think I might have watched it around the time that New Who started, just because it was there and, you know, everybody's excited for Doctor Who. And I was like, oh, there's an adventure here. So I watched it then. And then I've watched it. We watched it about a year or so ago, just because I think there was some reason why. I can't remember why. And in fact, I think I brought it up on this show. I think if you look back and on some of our, like if you put in this, the title of this, and then do a search, I think we did it. I must have talked about it, but in any case, so this is my third time watching it. But you know what? And this time it was more annoying because I don't have it on, you know, DVD. So I just watch it on the BBC website. And you would think with today's technology and broadband and everything that it would just like load up and just like play big time and with no issues, because it's like 10 years old, right? And over 10 years old, and yet it still takes a while to load. It glitched out a few times. It was just a frustrating couple of hours kind of watching this. So I don't, even though it's available for free on the website, I don't know if I would encourage people to check it out that way, or maybe at least if they are interested, check it out, but then go ahead and buy it, because it's probably much, much better if you just sit down and pop it in and just watch it for a couple hours.
That's probably a result of the BBC's thing of just leaving old web pages up and not updating them.
It could be.
Yeah, I think that's old technology.
That stated policy is basically, once something's been published, we will not take it down, but we don't necessarily update it. So if you want to find it online, there's actually a site called Daily Motion, which has all the episodes, but they have French subtitles, which is interesting. but it streams really well. I was actually just watching a couple of the episodes before we got on this call from over the hotel Wi-Fi, and it streamed perfectly well. So
that's good. I'm glad that there's that option. I mean, it's a good story. I like Richard E. Grant a lot. I was well aware of him prior to this. I can't remember the first thing I saw him in, but I've just been a fan of his for a long time. And I don't think he sounds like Paul McGann at all, but that's okay. I guess I could see that, but I guess because I just have a history with Richard E. Grant, I just know that voice. To me, he's got a very unique voice. And I think he would have, you know, if things were different, you know, if we hadn't got the Fox movie, that would have been the perfect time for Richard E. Grant to debut as the Doctor, I think. somewhat later when, as you get older, maybe, maybe not. And yeah, for Russell T to say that, you know, blah, 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 he phoned it in or whatever, just look at Richard E. Grant's work and you know that that guy doesn't phone it in. I mean, he does quality work in almost everything that he's in. So that's kind of unfortunate, but it's obvious that he wanted to go a different way. But, and, you know, I don't want to suggest anything at all here by this statement, but if when you watch this, there's a lot of things that you go, whoa, there's a lot of things here that when New Who does come back, right, there's a lot of things that I'm not saying that they used and they took from this, but it seems like, wow, there's a lot of similarities here in terms of how they're going to bring the show forward. And I thought those were kind of interesting. Like, this feels like, it does really feel like a cross between Classic Who and New Who.
It certainly does. And there's also several of the cast members in this end up in New Who playing different parts as well. So there's that interesting crossover. I also like the fact that they sort of touch back on the Classic Who with an interesting intro that was sort of part Seventh Doctor, part Third Doctor, part Fourth Doctor mashup. We'd rather than go out and make their own, they sort of took the best bits and from several other opening sequences and sort of mashed them up together, and it works. It definitely has its own thing. And of course, Richard E. Grant had already played the Doctor. I mean, in The Curse of Fatal Death, he'd already been one of the many Doctors in that sort of comedy thing.
So. Exactly. He lasted a whole 15 seconds. It was pretty awesome. But one of the things, like, I agree with you, Mike, where you said they took some of the things from this and they carried it into the new series. Look at what the Doctor did to the apartment of the companion with Sophie and her husband when he blew up the paint shop or whatever it was and took out her house. The Ninth Doctor on the TV show in Rose, he blew up the department store.
Yeah. And you've got this, you know, working girl that is obviously going to be the companion, who wants more out of life, who's got a boyfriend who not really, you know, supporting her efforts to be sort of independent and want to do things outside of just the day-to-day stuff. I mean, there's a lot of, like, similarities there, you know. I think the colors are swapped as far as the couple, but, you know, it's still kind of like, wow, this could be Mickey and Rose in some ways.
Yeah, it is actually very much a blueprint for what they did with Rose going forward.
I think New Who has a real affinity with the novels, and Paul Cornell was one of the novelists. And it shows in Scream of the Shalka, that background. And so I'm not sure that it's so much they took things from Shalka, but from the novels and from the sensibility that was in the novels and from some of Paul Cornell's writing. And Paul goes on to write for New Who. And in fact, he even adapts one of his novels for New Who. And so, you know, I think New Who, I mean, Scream of the Shalka to me does seem like this sort of weird, but not weird in a bad way, sort of cross between Old Who and New Who, because there's definitely a Classic Who sensibility here, especially around the Doctor, especially around the later Doctors of Classic Who. But there's a lot of new ideas introduced that show up in New Who. And I just for history alone, I would say go watch Scream of the Shalka. Yeah. Just because it does, I think it does have a correlation with New Who.
Yeah, it does keep the.
Sorry.
It does keep the, you know, the classic story structure, you know, which the, you know, it's a four-parter. Each one of the parts is about 20 minutes or so, 15, 20 minutes, and it has a cliffhanger. So it just, you know, it feels like a Classic Who story in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And if you're a completionist, why not? You know, basically, you know, if you want to watch all things Doctor Who, it is entertaining. It is, you know, there's times when it felt like it dragged or you could tell it was filler.
Yeah, you could just pretend that this is a quote unquote lost episode that they had to animate because they only had the audio.
yes.
And I will say, as far as the animation goes, you know, for Flash animation at the time, I think it still holds up pretty well. I love the design of a lot of the characters. I like the design of the Doctor. I like the design of the creatures. I thought the animation, although it's Flash, it still looks pretty good. And I really give them a lot of credit for that. This animation is better than a lot of the, you know, animation that we've seen for some of the recreations that they've done and they've issued out.
Oh, the animation they did on some of the first Doctor stuff? Oof, that's tough.
Some of that's pretty tough. I mean, I think this is the same company that did a couple of those, but this is, like I said, this was better, I thought. Like Alan said, I thought they really used animation to its strength. They did a story in which you to pull this off live action would have been very difficult.
Yeah, it would have been a huge budget to try and do this live action. You would have been up in
the Schalke would not have looked good.
Yeah, I don't think they would have gone worldwide.
No.
No.
And actually, I don't know, the company novelization expands on that tremendously and actually gives it a much more global feel even than the animated series does. So I highly recommend, if you like the basic storyline, is to get the novelization, because that gives it a lot more depth, explains a lot of the scenes, a lot of the reasoning behind some of the dialogue. And there's a great essay in the back from Paul Cornell about the production history of this, from the original idea through to the final thing. So I highly recommend going and getting the novel as well if you're interested in this one.
Do you know if Paul was supposed to be, was he like kind of the showrunner or the main writer of going to be throughout the whole thing? Or was he just responsible for like just the first story and that was going to be, they were going to have other writers come?
I think he was responsible for this story. There's a whole story behind the story about actually he wrote it on his honeymoon when he was on honeymoon in New Zealand, and then he couldn't find a white place with a Wi-Fi to email the script to the BBC, and it was late, so he had to email it to his house and then pay somebody to go and literally break into his house and get it off his computer and send it to the BBC.
Oh, jeez.
There's this whole wonderful backstory to it. But yeah, I think he was basically going to be just the first writer and setting up the ideas and the concepts for this incarnation of the Doctor. But they actually had, I think, two separate producers who worked on this. The first one was actually made redundant or laid off partway into the production. And then they ended up with a second producer. And I think the idea was that producer was going to drive it forward and sort of be the showrunner, but it didn't happen. So.
Gotcha. Guys, like you said, he lays out so many sort of things to follow up on. I didn't know if he was going to be the one responsible for paying that off.
Yeah.
Well, it was interesting though, because Paul has always had a good feel for the Doctor, and you could tell even in this one. But, you know, one of the things we haven't talked about yet, and let's jump in with it, is the Master.
Yep.
This is interesting because if you're going by Doctor Who lore, the last time we saw the Master, he was the Eric Roberts Master.
That's right.
And
unfortunately.
Exactly. And he gets sucked into the TARDIS. And now you're finding out that the Doctor has a master robot voiced brilliantly by Derek Jacobi, by the way.
And of course, goes on to play the Master.
Exactly. Later. Much later. But it was interesting because this is a robot master made to look like a mix between Anley and Degato. And
so
he's one of the funnest parts of this whole story. I mean, it's really fun to see the Master snarking with everybody.
Right.
And the reveal that he's an android is actually very intriguing.
Yeah. There is supposed to be a backstory to this that I think was Doctor Who Monthly was in, that and the tragedy backstory that they keep hinting to, and I see if I can remember this, but I think the backstory was meant to be something like that the Doctor had fallen in love with the daughter of the president of Gallifrey and retired to Gallifrey. And then Gallifrey was attacked, and the surviving Time Lords disappeared into the Matrix. And the Doctor's lover died during the attack, but the Master's last body was used in staving off the attack and trying to save her. So he rescued the Master's consciousness and put it into the android, and then the Time Lords basically sent him off around the universe to solve problems and be their troubleshooter.
That kind of makes sense.
But the novel talks about how they'd actually been traveling together for like 500 years or something, and were like an old bickering old married couple between the two of them.
You got a little bit of that actually in the story.
Yeah. Jacoby's sort of subtle undertones, I think, were brilliant in the story.
You felt like he was about to hypnotize the female companion.
Allison.
It was actually, you know, Alice, it felt like there was times, you know, the very first time, like, she was on the TARDIS with him and was like, oh, why don't you come here? And it felt like, exactly, you know, you're going to now betray the Doctor, blah, 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 like done a zillion times on the TV show. And so.
Yeah. And the way you sort of let the Shulker into the TARDIS and offered to, you know, show them how to fly it so they could get him off away from Earth and stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Was he being genuine, or was he sort of a two-level conversation? Was he actually going to double-cross them? Or did he really want to steal the TARDIS? You're never quite sure.
Yep, exactly. You never knew. Well, you can never trust the Master completely, robot or non-robot.
Why he's not allowed out outside the TARDIS.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I enjoyed the story overall, and it moved very smoothly, other than the times where you could tell were filler. And I'm sorry we didn't get to see more Richard E. Grant as the Doctor.
And Allison as well. I mean, I have to give a lot of props to, Sophie, I hope I don't butcher her last name, Okonedo.
Yeah.
I've seen her in several things, and I didn't recognize her voice right away. I knew it sounded familiar, but and then I looked her up and I was like, oh yeah, I definitely know Sophie, and she's really awesome. She's a very great talent, and she would have made a great companion. If they did make a series out of this, a live action series with Richard E. Grant as the Doctor and Sophie as the companion, you got a winner pair right there.
Yeah, they seem to have a great relationship. And didn't she go on to play Liz 10?
Yes, she did.
Yes, yeah. She did.
Mm-hmm. You who? Yeah.
I mean, it's a real testament, actually, to Paul Cornell that with this, I'm not a fan of the animation, to be honest. But within but I understand the restrictions of it, what they were working with in 2003. And I do like the stylized art style, at least for the most part. But it's a testament to Paul Cornell that even within those limitations, he develops those characters. I mean, you care about Allison, you care about the Doctor, even the monsters. There's some.
I didn't care about them. Nope.
It makes a kind of sense within the universe what they're doing. And, you know, good for him for still giving us a good story within those confines, because at some points the design of it, the production of it is fighting with the story. Like the changes between scenes could be very choppy, and it would sometimes make it hard to follow. And that kind of art style, I really love those stylized, like, thick black lines and that muted color, which, I mean, that was actually quite beautifully done. But it got in the way at some points. They would try to put too much in a scene, and so it would get muddled and hard to follow. But, it still holds up. The story still holds up.
No, I agree with that. I've never been a big fan of flash animation. I just always thought it was very clunky and such. Especially coming from somebody who used to do it. It was, you know, it was never what it was built up to be. And but with what they were working with, it came out really nice.
It did. And actually, what surprised me was watching it on my big screen TV from the, on the DVD the other week, and how much it looks good even on the big screen like TV. It really held up.
The illustration style goes a long way.
Exactly. Exactly. And like we had mentioned earlier, there are a couple of Troughton stories that this company did, and you could see the same kind of art style with, mm-hmm. you know, more classic stories.
There's Cosgrove Hall, the guys who do Danger Mouse and Count Duckula, and that's good.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is really cool. So, you know, would you recommend this for somebody who hasn't seen Doctor Who, though, before?
Oh, boy.
That's a good
maybe for somebody. I mean, if you're a Scooby-Doo fan or something, then you're pretty kind of used to this kind of animation.
Yeah, I don't know if you'd start here. You know, certainly for those people who are fans of New Who, I think this is a nice sort of precursor to New Who. So therefore, it's interesting. But and it's interesting on its own. So it, you know, I don't want to give it any discredit that way, but yeah, to just jump in because there's, yeah, if you're new to the concept completely and you start with this, then yeah, I think there you're going to be lost for a while and you might not really get it.
Yeah, I think it's a good precursor to New Who. It gets, as we said before, has a good resonance. I mean, it is designed to stand alone. It doesn't fit tightly into the classic Who continuity. It sort of bridges the two. But I think there's those subtle mentions to the backstory, I think, which we sort of, the fans pick up on, I think would be confusing to somebody who isn't familiar with the mythos, even if not the detail of it. So, you know, you don't need the detail, but you need to know the basics, I think, to really pick up on where this is going.
Yeah, and one thing that is kind of a knock on it, too, is that just like the, you know, the 1996 television special, you know, could have introduced the idea that the Doctor was half human. This one kind of plays with that as well. And that's for a lot of Doctor Who fans. That's like, no, 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 no. Like,
yeah, I hate that. But, you know, that, I mean, I can just hand wave that, that away. It doesn't really detract from the story for me.
I could see
that. Just out of curiosity, I'm not sure if you're a Doctor Who fan. I mean, I really think this is something that if you're at all into the mythos, I mean, if you're a casual viewer, then it's probably not going to do anything for you. But if you're somebody who's a little more into the fandom, I think you'd enjoy it, even just as a curiosity.
Yeah, as I said at the beginning, for me, it's a great thing about this is I think it's a great what if, exercise in what if. And you know, if you enjoy things like the Big Finish audiobooks and the sort of spin-offs and the novels that sit outside the TV continuity and play around with the ideas, I think this sort of fits in with that sort of mindset. That if you enjoy the Big Finish audio plays and shows, I think you would enjoy this just as a what if, an exercise in what if, a speculative fiction, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was interesting, too, because one of my favorite scenes in this was when the Doctor was falling into the black hole and he was able to piece the TARDIS together and go through the door to get out of it.
Yeah, I love that his mobile phone was actually part of the TARDIS. So he sort of recalled the TARDIS to rebuild itself around the mobile phone.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And that was like my first like fist pump moment in this. It was like, oh, this is actually pretty awesome. And so it was
because he does have a sonic, but the idea of his TARDIS phone was really cool, I thought.
Yeah, I thought it's not something they've really picked up on, and I think it would make a cool visual at some point because they seem to keep destroying the TARDIS with regular monotony at the moment. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe Jodie Whittaker's got one in that coat pocket as she's falling. I don't know.
No, it would be interesting to see if that would be a nice little callback, actually, if they could do something like that. But it was a lot of fun at points. I didn't like the relationship, you know, the Doctor had at all with with the military people in this.
Really? Okay. I actually really enjoyed that because it was this whole dichotomy that he suffers with right back from the second Doctor of, you know, he hates the military, he hates guns, but he sees them as a tool to use and develops personal relationships with the individual military people, even if he hates the concept of the military itself as an institution.
I can see that.
I like the scene where he's talking to Sophie at the time, or Allison, and he says something to the effect of, you know, I hate the military, and yet on the other hand, some of my best friends are part of the military. So it's like he's got this weird sort of relationship with them. Yes.
Yeah, it just felt very classic Who to me. I mean, that's how he usually relates to the military.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was, I don't think they called themselves UNIT, but it was pretty much UNIT, right?
Yeah, I think it was UNIT.
It was interesting. They never actually used the phrase UNIT. So I don't know if there was a rights or copyright issue around that. But.
Yeah, I would probably, because they seem like UNIT to me. I mean, that was just, yeah. I mean, this is pre-Torchwood, so.
Right.
Way pre-Torchwood. So you're at least, what, three seasons? Probably Doctor Who, probably at least 5 years away from Torchwood.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Although, for the record, Captain Jack was alive during this time.
He probably was screaming right along with everybody.
He was screaming for an entirely different reason.
Oh, Jack. All right. Any final thoughts before we go ahead and rate this one?
We haven't talked about the other cameo that's in there, the other Doctor Who connection.
Oh, David Tennant.
David Tennant is in it, yes.
That is true. But he had an uncredited scene.
Basically. Uncredited 40-second cameo as a screaming warehouseman, yes.
Exactly.
Well, couldn't the story goes that he was recording something else in the studio next door and found out they were doing something Doctor Who, and he's such a Doctor Who fanboy that he was like, I just want to come in and do something. So they hastily created the character of Warehouseman number 2. Gave him like 2 lines and a scream. Yes. So.
Little did they know.
Yeah.
Exactly. Gee, wibbly wobbly, timey wimey. If only. Yeah. That is awesome. Yeah. The casting overall, very well done. And a shame it couldn't go further. And just what we got also, I guess, you know, Stephen Moffat was seeing, you know, when he did the Dalek heads, you know, stocks coming out of people's heads. He might have gotten the idea from this thing.
That was my first thought when I saw that, too.
It was like, aha. I will say, you know,
Allison takes that awfully well. I mean, she's constantly having things taken in and out of her head. Yes. She's just like, oh, okay.
Yeah, she's very blasé about it being put back in her head, isn't she? So,
yes.
He's like, do you trust me? I would have been like, not that much.
No, exactly. Now, you got that thing out of there. I do not want it back in. No. Who cares about humanity? I'm not putting it back in my head. All right. This time, we are going to go ahead and rate 1 out of 5 TARDISes, 1 being the worst, 5 being the best. Alan, this is your story, so go ahead.
As I said, it is actually one of my favorites, partly because it's, I don't know, the great sort of what-if speculative story. So I give it 4 out of 5 TARDISes for myself.
Wow. Okay. Mary?
I think I'm going to give it a 3.5. I mean, it's definitely enjoyable. I do recommend people go and watch it. I think there are times when the animation makes it hard to follow, but I commend Paul Cornell for his story, even though there are some plot holes, but it's Doctor Who, there always are, and you know, you just wave your hands. You know, it's kind of a typical invasion story, but there's a lot of character development, and you really feel for these characters, and it rises above the old technology that was used to create it. So I think 3.5.
Awesome. Mikey?
Yeah, I'm going to go with a 3.5 as well. There's a lot of, you know, sort of what if Doctor projects out there. I think Big Finish, don't they have like David Warner playing a doctor from another parallel universe or something going on in some storyline right there?
Yeah, third doctor.
Right, right. And then you've got like a couple of other things in either in comics or novels or whatnot. And so, look, I mean, there's so much actual Doctor Who content that like legitimate, like that it's kind of hard to, you know, to like just make time for all of that, let alone anything that seems excessive. But I would say this is an exception that I strongly endorse just because of at the time, we thought this might be like the start of the revival. Like we really thought that this was, you know, after the kind of, you know, trip step of the 96 television movie, like this seemed like, hey, this, if they're not going to do anything, this seems like a pretty good answer to it. And, you know, as far as answers go, it was pretty solid as far as a debut, at least the story-wise goes, and the way the delivery was, and the performances, like I said, by both, actually all three, we'll say the Doctor and his two companions, right? Like that's a pretty interesting, I would like to see where this would have gone. So, you know, if they decided at some point at Big Finish or whoever to continue on with this crew, I would sign up because I think it's a nice little tangent, and it's a really like just the talent involved is makes this something to check out for sure. No, but just don't do it like at the BBC site because it'll drive you crazy.
Buy the DVD with our Amazon link.
Yes,
exactly. Yes. Exactly. That's what I did. So, hey, my rating, I'm going to give this one a 3.5. I enjoyed it, but there just felt like the downtimes were too much of a downtime for me to give it a 4. There was a lot I wanted to like it more. I love the design of the Shalka. I love like the glow inside of the hive one. And I liked how the master was in it. And I liked what the TARDIS looked like inside.
Oh, yeah. The interior of the TARDIS is definitely like kind of moving towards New Who.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was very where you really got that expansive feel of the TARDIS that you see in the later episodes. Very mm-hmm. much so. Yeah.
I liked also how the TARDIS had an elevator in this one. Because you kept on seeing the Doctor coming out of the elevator multiple times.
And a Zeppelin hangar.
Yeah, exactly. It was just like, yeah, I was down in the Zeppelin hangar. It was just like, what? This thing has everything. It's awesome. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun and definitely worth checking out. If you're a Doctor Who fan, either new series or old series, check it out. It definitely, and go through the Amazon store. Help us out a little bit. Speaking of helping us out a little bit, we're going to be back again in 2 weeks when we are going to be talking about The Unquiet Dead. We are going to the 9th Doctor series. We actually have not.
We're going in order.
Exactly. We actually, you know, haven't reviewed that one. And this one opens, you know, it's the very first historical episode of the new series. And it actually is a lot of fun with Dr. Rose. And, you know, you actually get to meet possibly somebody from Torchwood or a relative of her, at least. It's actually kind of neat to see. So it's, you know, there's cool stuff to, you know, that we got going on. Still got a while till new Doctor Who. So join us in a couple weeks when we come back with The Unquiet Dead. Before we get out of here, let's thank Alan for joining us this week.
Thank you for having me on the show. It's been great. I'd love to do another one sometime.
You are more than welcome. Anytime, my friend. Any thing you want to promote or any, you know, website and such?
I was going to say I'm going to be at Comic Palooza this weekend in Houston, but like I think this is probably going to come out right in the middle of that show. So that's probably the next major thing I got coming. And as I said, a couple of books that will be coming out this year that I'm contributing essays to, one on G.I. Joe and one on Battlestar Galactica. Just keep an eye on my Twitter feed or my website for announcements about those when they hit the shelves.
I also have to recommend people check out, you know, our good friend Van Allen Plexico over there on White Rocket. Alan and he do a couple of different podcasts, one on Formula One driving, which I listen to because I like Formula One stuff, as well as you guys have been reviewing the Bond movies in order. So another iconic British figure you are talking about all about in detail over there. Good stuff.
Yes, you can find that. Actually, that has its own separate podcast feed. It's Honor Her Majesty's Secret Podcast, which you can find on iTunes and Podbean.
That is awesome. That is awesome, man. And of course, let's thank our regulars for being here. Mary, as always.
Thank you. I really enjoyed talking about Screaming the Shotgun. Thank you, Alan, for choosing this one. I hadn't seen it in a while, and it was really fun to go back and revisit it. And if anyone would like to check out my artwork, just go to maryogle.com or find me on Etsy at eVision Arts.
That is awesome. And, of course, Mr. Mike.
As always, it's my pleasure.
Excellent, sir. And, you know, we got a con coming up very soon, like Matthew talked earlier. We have going to be at Concasterburris. We are going to be there on the 9th and 10th of June, and we will have a table set up. So please, if you are in the Huntsville, Alabama area and want to talk some Doctor Who, this is the place to do it. And the three of us, Mary, myself, and Mike, are going to be all together for the second time ever. It's pretty awesome, actually. Yeah, so woo-hoo! So we might have dark clouds above Huntsville because of that, but... You know, we will be the rainbow parting the ways in the clouds. So it should be very cool. Yeah.
And Matthew's a very brave man.
Exactly. It is going to be a lot of fun. And we'll also have other friends of the show at the con. So you'll see Kirby, Jennifer Hartshorn's going to be there. Judy will be there and a few other folks that we know and, you know, are friends with. Definitely. And we might actually, you know, be doing some live recording while we're there. So you never know what can happen. So, with that being said, please help support the station by going to the ESO Network Patreon. You could help, you know, support everything. You could actually hear panels from up at the recently Wholanta right up on Patreon. And we have more stuff coming. Actually, this week, you might actually hear another panel that we recorded there. So, you know, all you have to do is go to ESOnetwork.com and click on the link for the Patreon. And if you also are looking to buy this, right next to the Patreon link is the Amazon.com link. All you have to do is click there. It doesn't cost you anything extra. And you could pick up Scream of the Shaka also and enjoy it just as much as we did. So it's pretty awesome. And we also have, you know, a t-shirt shop right next to that. We're just giving you everything, folks. We really like giving it all to you. So please go to, you know, ESOnetwork.com, where you have our Patreon, you have our Amazon, and you have our TeePublic store right all next to each other. And it helps every time you click on it, it helps support the network. And, you know, if it helps support the network, it helps us. So it's, you know, trickle down effect, economics, as they used to say. It helps any way you can, and we do appreciate it. So we will see you guys in 2 weeks. Until then, my name is Mike Faber, and we will be here next time on the Earth Station Who podcast. Peace, and we are done.
Yay.
You have been listening to Earth Station Who, a bi-weekly pop culture podcast dedicated to all things Doctor Who, featuring talents from across the universe. All topics on the show are the sole opinions of the individual and are used for entertainment value alone. You can subscribe to our podcast up on iTunes, Stitcher, or follow our blog at www.esopodcast.com. You can also follow us up on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+. If you enjoyed the show, please leave feedback up on iTunes.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.